The Soldiers of God on the March in Iran.
Terrorist attack in southeastern Iran has killed scores of people, including several senior officers of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC.
More than 40 people dead in Iran, militant attacks continue in Pakistan, and more U.S. soldiers dead in Afghanistan. Does anyone believe they're really fighting for God? Honoring the fallen, trying to understand the violence on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Monday, October 19th. I'm Celeste Headlee here with John Hockenberry.
Good morning, Celeste. Coming up also, no more loud town meetings on health care. It's all whispery backroom dealing on Capitol Hill. Our Todd Zwillick reports from just outside the back rooms. The New Orleans Saints come charging in. Are the Giant Killers the best team in the NFL? Plus, Hollywood counts the cash from a blockbuster weekend with Where the Wild Things Are. But what does the children's story actually say about parenting boys?
But first, let's go to Jonathan Marcus, diplomatic correspondent for our partner, the BBC. A group called Soldiers of God is claiming responsibility for that suicide bombing in Iran that killed at least 42 people over the weekend. And we're now facing instability in Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. So, Jonathan, how much of a worry should this be for the West?
Well, obviously, Pakistan is, in a sense, the central worry. Pakistan and Afghanistan combined, the insurrectionary movements inside Iran pose a rather different kind of problem. Obviously, the Obama administration and the West in general are trying to encourage the Iranians into dialogue, and I think that's why you've seen the various expressions from a number of Western governments of unease and concern for what has happened in Iran. It's not in anyone's interest that Iran suffers the kind of domestic terrorism that we see in Afghanistan and indeed in Pakistan.
Okay, we're going to talk about that more with Jonathan Marcus in just a moment. But first, everything you need to know this morning.
Well, in the headlines, White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel says there will be no decision on troop levels in Afghanistan until the presidential election there is settled. He also says that the new Afghan government must be deemed a, quote, true partner of the United States. Meanwhile, the Afghan Election Commission is refusing to accept the findings of a panel backed by the United Nations. Two officials from that UN panel say Hamid Karzai dropped below the number of votes needed to avoid a presidential runoff.
Moving to Vienna, where Russia, France, and the U.S. will hold talks with Iran on sending its uranium abroad for enrichment. State TV reports from Iran suggest that Tehran is backing away from the proposed deal. Back home, an attorney for Richard and Mayuni Heaney says the couple is willing to voluntarily turn themselves in to face any charges stemming from an alleged hoax. A Colorado sheriff says the story that their six-year-old floated away in a giant balloon last week was a publicity stunt. In the markets, Wall Street was down a bit on Friday. Dow's going to kick off at 99.96. That's back below the 10,000 mark. The S&P starts trading at 10.88, and the NASDAQ will open up at 21.57. So one of our listeners, Nesta, put it best. She wrote on our website, Max from Where the Wild Things Are and Falcon. She just doesn't understand the hype.
Falcon? No, that's the...
Falcon Heaney.
That's the boy, yes.
Yeah,
the,
but unfortunately...
Oh my God, I feel like a hostage to this story.
Unfortunately, we
it's
all...
A hostage situation.
Any parent has taken comments about their parenting style from somebody, and we're asking you, if parenting is a spectator sport, how much do you have to deal with second-guessing or backseat parenting? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Our government.
Iran.
Your government.
Proliferation.
Public option.
A serious insurgency.
We do have a plan. We're working on it.
Just to give you a sense of perspective.
Good morning. It's Monday. That means it's time to check out what's on the agenda for this week.
There needed to be something about Balloon Boy in there, Jay. Why wasn't that in there? There needed to be a Balloon Boy voice.
You really
in there.
Want the Balloon Boy and no. The permanent the music for
but,
the agenda?
But it's certainly open season on the Heaneys, right? Everyone's going to be parenting their children for the next, like, 30 years, right?
Sir, I mean, we're both parents, John. Yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it feels to me, and maybe this is just me as a single mom, but it feels to me as, like, as soon as you become a parent, it's open season on you.
As soon as you leave the house and anybody sees, you know...
You bring the baby home, right, exactly. And you're toast.
Well, the Heenies have got some problems, that's for sure.
That's right. And we're asking other parents. Call in at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. This is my question for you. At what point does second-guessing become a problem? Because the Heenies invited the world into their home, but the world comes into your home and every time you bring your kids over to a neighbor's or you have a birthday party at home. So when does that become a problem, this backseat parenting, the armchair quarterbacking for parents? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org. But this morning, we're going to talk about the agenda for the week. And we have to go to Iran this morning. Just this morning, the chief of Iran's Revolutionary Guard is accusing the United States, Britain, and Pakistan of having links with the Sunni militants responsible for that suicide bombing that killed 5 senior guard commanders and 37 other people. So we're joined by Marcus Mabry, international business editor for our partner, The New York Times. And Jonathan Marcus rejoins us, the diplomatic correspondent for our partner, the BBC. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
So a group called the Soldiers of God, which is a Sunni Muslim militant group, has claimed responsibility for the attacks. But as I said before, the chief of Iran's Revolutionary Guard is accusing the U.S. and Britain and even Pakistan of funding this group and being behind these terrorist attacks. Is this plausible?
Well, it's certainly a claim the Iranians have made many times before, and usually, actually, it's the British government that is the chief evildoer, allegedly, according to the Iranians. There's no apparent evidence, obviously, that Western countries or indeed even Pakistan necessarily have been backing these groups, though, of course, they operate close to Pakistan's border. I think, in a sense, there's a broader problem here with the plausibility of these sorts of claims, especially inside Iran itself, and that is, obviously, that when you've had governments abroad, notably the Bush administration, are pushing very hard for what is in effect a regime change policy in Iran, then of course the plausibility that of such stories, of such claims does, I suppose, tend to grow. It's interesting that the Obama administration has pretty well, I think, clearly given up with the idea of regime change inside Iran. It will be interesting to see how these sorts of claims play out there now, not least because obviously the Iranian authorities themselves are not terribly popular in the wake of the contested elections.
Is the intended audience for these kind of claims, when Iran blames the U.S. and Britain, are they really just trying to speak to their own people? Is that who they're trying to convince?
I think they are. I think there is inevitably a tendency when these things happen to try and get everybody to rally around with a national spirit. I mean, this is not obviously the first attack of this kind, though it's a particularly serious one. And it just simply adds to the Iranian authorities' problems at this time. So I think the message is essentially, it's a defiant message vis-a-vis the outside world, but I think the message is essentially for domestic consumption.
Okay, we're going to talk more about Iran later this hour, but Jonathan, let's move to Pakistan. This is the third day of the Pakistani army's offensive against al-Qaeda and Taliban in South Waziristan. Is the government making progress here?
It's very hard to say. There aren't a lot of detailed reports from the ground. This is an offensive that has been heralded for many weeks now. And indeed, it's clear, I think, that the other side sought to get their retaliation in first with this wave of bomb attacks and so on inside Pakistan itself. It's going to be very, very difficult, this offensive, and I'm not entirely sure that there is going to be a clear-cut outcome. The terrain is very difficult. These are essentially lawless areas where the writ of the Pakistan government doesn't run. I think there are concerns about the capabilities and capacities of Pakistan's armed forces, and of course caught up in all of this are huge numbers of civilians, many of whom have fled their homes, which again adds an additional burden for the authorities in Islamabad that they have to deal with.
You know, we have this violence in Pakistan, we've had the bombings in Iran, and Marcus Mabry, we have obviously the ongoing situation in Afghanistan, and the news now is that there was so much fraud in the election that Hamid Karzai did not get more than 50% of the vote. There will be a runoff. And here was Senator John Kerry on Face the Nation yesterday.
I don't see how President Obama can make a decision about the committing of our additional forces or even the further fulfillment of our mission that's here today without an adequate government in place or knowledge about what that government's going to be.
So Marcus, with our partner, the New York Times, what does this mean? Does this mean that Barack Obama's White House may be buying more time, that we may have to wait for a decision on troop levels until a runoff election is held?
Well, the administration said very clearly that they will. They're going to wait until there's actual an election outcome in Afghanistan.
Very clearly? The administration also said negotiated settlement. They were all over the map on this. Mm-hmm. Rahm Emanuel was talking about maybe there'll be an election, maybe there won't. They're going to wait for something.
Well, you know,
That's clear.
You know, it's interesting. Even Abdullah, the likely competitor in the runoff with Karzai, has himself come out and said that, if they say that there'll be another election, maybe we won't have to do it. Maybe I would be willing if they just say that, you know, that I would be the candidate who would be in that runoff election. I might be willing myself to actually join a unity government. Mm. So the Afghanis have not made it clear themselves what kind of situation they want here as they try to evolve into a more plausible polity. At the same time, the administration has got to kind of sit back now and see what's going to happen before they can make a troop commitment. I think what's really scary here is you look at Afghanistan, you now see this arc of instability. And Afghanistan is kind of in the middle of this arc, but this arc stretches really from a likely to be, if not already, nuclear-armed, instable Iran to a nuclear-armed, as we already know, an instable Pakistan, with Afghanistan between the two. It is an incredibly scary arc of instability, soon to be a nuclear-armed arc of instability.
And the U.S. is engaged in all three at various levels.
Absolutely, at different levels in all three, and not with actually a plausible policy in any of the three cases. So the likelihood that this administration will actually be able to make great progress in any of those countries in that arc of instability, that nuclear arc of instability, is incredibly unlikely in the next 3 years of this administration. And that's what I think most scary, both for Washington, but also for our allies in Europe.
Maybe that's the new takeaway. Instead of axis of evil, arc of instability. Marcus Mabry coined it right here on our show, arc of instability. I like that.
Well, we need to talk quickly about health care reform because the White House came out swinging this weekend. Clearly, any good feeling between the White House and insurance companies is over. But the White House, at the same time that they're saying they don't let the insurance companies ruin what we're doing so well, that the White House is saying that they're making really good progress.
We are farther along than we've ever been in passing a comprehensive health insurance reform in this country. It's something we've discussed for 100 years.
That's White House Senior Advisor David Axelrod on George Stephanopoulos' program. So,
sounds like he's declaring victory there.
Exactly, that's right.
It's a little premature.
You take your victories where you can, perhaps.
So, Marcus, victory at the same time that we're warning that it could be derailed by the insurance industry.
Well, you know, they have to do that. The administration had to decide early on who were they going to actually assail in this fight for health care reform. There are so many constituents, so many different players when it comes to healthcare reform. You have the insurance companies, you have big pharma, the pharmaceutical companies, who charge much more in this country than any other developed country in the world because we let them. Other countries actually set price controls for their drugs. Europe does it all over the place. We do not do it in the U.S., and so they make a great deal more money here than they do in other modern democracies, other rich countries. So they had to decide who to take on. The administration decided we're going to take on insurance companies. We're going to make deals with doctors, hospitals, big pharma, and vilify the insurance companies. Well, the insurance companies, not surprisingly, don't agree with that, taking them on, so they're going to try to fight back. It's going to be interesting to see if we have a deal that emerges, a single Senate program that emerges with the single that emerges with a public option, meaning a government control that can, government program that can compete with private insurers. It's going to be interesting to see if it comes out of the Senate. It really seems unlikely, but the House, it will definitely have it in their version. So it's going to be a Democrat versus Democrat fight here.
Okay, Marcus Magri with our partner, the New York Times. We also spoke with Jonathan Marcus, with our diplomatic correspondent for our partner, the BBC. And Marcus, you have twins on the way, right?
I do have twins on the way.
Are you prepared for the vaccine? Parenting? You ready to take all the advice on how to become a parent?
Well, I got to tell you.
Not how to become a parent. That seems clear. You understand that.
If we, you know, tell the whole world that one of those twins has gone up in a balloon and he hasn't, and we've concocted the whole scheme, and we expect the 6-year-old twin to keep the lie. Well,
yeah, I wouldn't do the balloon thing the first couple months.
Backseat me.
Right. Thanks, Jonathan Marcus and Marcus Mabry.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.